Okay, choose the intro mode, engage. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Banff Podcast. I'm here today with my two favorite regular co-hosts, Mr. Walter Billiard, who's been... Hey, Walt, how you doing? And Mr. Dan Hauser, ever more famous every day.
Hello.
Hey, Dan. So guys, we were talking about stuff, and I forgot everything we were going to talk about in this podcast. So let's say Stark City, quick update. How's it going, Dan?
There is a list of work to be done, which is being done. Actually, I'm taking a break to do the podcast so that I can continue working on the first part of it. Our goal is to have everything done for the first release. Probably by the end of December, everything will be finished for Silver District and Welcome to Stark City, that whole first book we're releasing. I'm on track to get that done. So the first thing I wanted to get finished, however, were the backer characters. And I've been, if all the folks have been writing on the books and everything, we have a Wikipedia, a little wiki for it, where I've been updating every time I finish something for the backer characters. Like in the backer character section, there's the character listed and their artwork. So I'm almost done with that, actually. Today will probably be the last day of finishing out those, and I'll be sending out emails, or Mike will be sending out emails to the backers whose characters are finished, and they can take a look at the finished pick. I think the one that's probably going to get done last is going to be... I don't want to mess up the name here. It's Kelly Van Campen. Wanted a cameo, and they asked for an old-school robot, so I'm going to actually put it in the history portion of it. I had a really good idea for how I wanted to lay out a picture that was suggested for the history portion, where one of the main NPCs, Sentinel, is fighting the Master of the Fair, who is kind of a Master of the World, H.G. Wells kind of World's Fair villain thing. But I think the picture's going to turn out really well. And that'll be the last one that gets done. So, Kelly, hold on to your hat. You'll probably see it. But you might not be able to see your character other than privately. I won't be posting up images of that. But sometime soon I'll be showing off the backer characters on Facebook, and I'll probably throw them up onto the or have Mike throw them up onto the Kickstarter page.
I live to serve, my liege.
Good. Oh, man, that reminds me.
Huh? So,
Oh, hey, what's up, George?
I'm just hanging out now.
Yeah, I know, man. I know you're hanging out.
Yeah, so you heard?
Yeah, dude, I heard. You sold Star Wars.
Yep. All of it.
Even Jar Jar.
Oh, yeah. Jar Jar Binks. Sold him.
To Disney?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You seem kind of bummed, George.
Pretty bummed. I don't know what I'm going to do with all this money.
Well, there's always, I don't know, starting something new, you know?
I did that. I made Red Tails.
Ooh. Did you sell that too?
It's not very nice.
Well, I'm going to let you play with this extension cord, and I'm going to go back to my podcast, okay, George?
Yeah, whatever.
Wow, George is bummed.
Yeah, that's what happens when you make a multi-billion dollar property and then decide to, kill it.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, in the case versus George Lucas, he did say that he is a toy maker. That's what his goal, he views himself as a guy who makes toys. And I think he was speaking I know that's ironic now, because it's like, oh, well, that's kind of his moment of irony, where he ended up being just a toy maker. But I think he was talking about things like the amazing things ILM has done over the years that people kind of just shit all over because they didn't like a couple movies. But like the Steadicam, like, do you understand that how much you love The Shining? You wouldn't even have The Shining without ILM. Like, the Steadicam shots of chasing Danny down the hallway on his scooter, that's like where George Lucas was really good at designing stuff for the movies. Like, this awesome Hobbit thing that's coming out, these red cameras, you can thank ILM for those. Like, ILM pushes that technology ever forward. And yeah, sometimes people abuse like the computer graphics and all that stuff in the movies, but I mean when they're done right, like Avengers and like Lord of the Rings, you know, I applaud George Lucas for finally saying, you know what, I'm not the guy who loves Star Wars as much as the people love Star Wars. And I will say that George Lucas did a lot of good for movies, and he should get a lifetime Oscar for all of the work he's done to make movies better and better and better, you know. But on the other hand, I mean, he did make Jar Jar Binks, so
yeah.
Yeah, that is, That's kind of like Gerald Ford falling down the stairs off of Air Force One. You can't kind of recover from that. Because now they're going to forever paint you as the guy who doesn't give a crap about the things you created. But anyway, that's just my little note about George Lucas and selling Star Wars. Like, I think it's a good move. I mean, after seeing Avengers, I was worried until I saw the Avengers, and I'm like, I have no worries about Disney knowing how to make the exact good thing to make money. You know, and I don't think it's a bad move on their part, you know, to pick up things like Pixar and, you know, ILM and all that stuff. I just hope that they're going to still be innovators rather than just, you know, rotate movie after movie after movie. I mean, that'll be high quality, but not really moving forward with any of the technology.
Well, so far, the stuff they've done for Marvel has been pretty groovy.
I mean, and ballsy, too, you know.
What would be really nice is if they could get all of their other properties back so that, you know, things like Spider-Man actually being in the Avengers could be a possibility and stuff like that.
I think that probably precipitated the move from Marvel to Disney because they were like, well, we don't have the money to fight with Sony and Fox to get these properties back, but Fox does not want a bidding war with Disney. And they don't. And Sony sure as hell doesn't want a bidding war with Disney, what with the PS3 and all that stuff, like how much tangential business they do in like hardware. So I'm sure they're going to say, well, you know, okay, you can have Spider-Man back. You know, and then Fox is going to go, yeah, we don't want to fight with you over this, you know.
Yeah,
or maybe they do. Yeah, exactly. Or maybe they do. And in that case, the fans still win because then they're going to be competing products, you know. It just sucks that you're not going to have Fantastic Four and X-Men in the Marvel Universe, though. I don't know. A lot of people say that the X-Men should be separate anyway. And I don't know. I don't want to get on that argument again.
Yeah, the Denny's is doing a Hobbit tie-in.
Denny's is this?
Yeah, they got like various things on the menu they've renamed for Hobbit characters.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there's a Shire sausage skillet, a Hobbit hole breakfast, Dwarves turkey and dressing dinner, Lonely Mountain treasure. It looks like it's, I don't know, tater tots. Radagast, Red Velvet, pancake puppies.
Dear God, some of those things look like, sound like they should be starring in a porno.
Yeah, oh, here you go, Gandalf's gobble melt.
Not ironic, all the food tastes like dragon shit.
The One Ring Burger. They're not kidding. Wow, that's sad. That's really terrible.
Their owner in Carson, Florida is Sauron, I guess.
That's a franchise, the guy at the Obamacare thing. Yeah, but I'm sure the Tolkien family is very happy about this.
What a toolbox! But that is like, I wonder if they have like actual like breakfast, like 11 and all that stuff.
Not in the menu I'm looking at, no. But
they have like sausage and bacon and onions and whatever they eat over bangers and mash. They had a traditional Hobbit.
Let's see. The Hobbit Hole breakfast is two eggs fried right in the center of a grilled cheddar bun half, served with bacon and grits. Why am I reading this shit? It's terrible. It's Denny's. If you go to Denny's, you're just hoping that the heroin addict who's making your food isn't spitting on it in front of you. I mean, it's 2 a.m. hangover food. What the fuck?
I get my April hair in it, whatever it is. Whatever you're calling the secret ingredient.
I'm just going to go into Denny's and order like random characters from Lord of the Rings and see what they give me. I want the all-seeing Eye of Sauron.
Can I have a wipe off, please? What's that? Oh, it's a soggy piece of toast wiped in the toilet.
Yeah, the Eye of Sauron would probably be served in the bathroom.
Yeah, I think.
Okay, we're getting off track here. Hey, let's talk about role-playing stuff. Our friend, go ahead.
Like Stark City, where's some of the greasy spoons in Stark City? What districts do we see those in?
Geartown, that's where you get greasy spoons. That's the blue collar district.
And do we have the names of any greasy spoons where some of the hero elite might go slumming?
I've got top men working on that right now, Walt.
top men.
Is our map on the wiki page yet?
Our map is available for free on RPG Now. They're like that from
the brochure.
Kickstarter, yeah, the brochure that Steph Worthington made up for us.
I left that on. I left a bunch of those. I printed them out and I left them on my one of my desks at work. And I had people asking me about those for days. It was great.
Yeah. That's right. It's like a little bit outside of Parts Unknown, and it's about 40 miles from Oz.
Okay, hey, so yeah, all the writing's pretty much done in Star City right now. There's a little tweaking to be done, and Dan's doing the art. So right now, hopefully, fingers crossed, we're on target to start delivering sometime in January 2013. We'll start, and every 2 weeks we'll have a new neighborhood book, followed by a few adventures. And we won't have to do any kind of embarrassing post on Kickstarter about how we all are really depressed.
I will say that now that will not happen with Star City. I'm not going to have another Kickstarter for an RPG thing go, yeah, well, you're, you know, funding the process, and part of the process is delays, because we've kind of mapped this out before we went up with the Kickstarter, and I mapped out time to do it. So looking at the actual art requirements, like I'm looking at our actual art suggestions plus like some ideas that I've had for pieces of art for each district. It's like, it's a ton of work, but it can all get done in the actual time that it's going to take to get done. So, yeah, there won't be delays on this project.
And now that we sit down the air, we're fucking committed, so, you know.
I am committed. Like, since I'm the art guy, alongside of Walt and a couple of other people, Adrian also is doing some of the artwork, right? I'm not positive if that's correct, because I see a couple different names of people getting tossed around, but
Adrian's doing the layout, and he might be brought in for art at some point.
Oh, that's right. If I tap out, if I say I can't do this, I need help, that won't be the case.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, you know, maybe these things can happen.
So everything is looking great. The history section should be finished sometime. I'm looking at today's 20th, and Thursday is Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I probably have the history section finished by Friday the 30th. I'm going out of town for our family Christmas, first week of December, but I'm bringing all my gear to work, so it'll be a working vacation. And I'll also be providing everyone with updates as we go. So Mike, figure once or twice a week, I'll just talk to an update saying exactly where I'm at as far as art goes and what I predict things going on, like what's going on in there. So yeah, artwork is on track. Everything is on track. So it's not like I'm going to have a Francis Ford Coppola moment where I'm like, oh, I need 50 helicopters. And, oh no, this is not working, so I need to do something different. I mean, I posted to Facebook today a piece of the art, and I forgot that Green Redeem, that Laughing Boy and Tangler both are names that have been used as villains in his game, apparently. I didn't know that, but Laughing Boy is a hero. I wanted a Spider-Man type hero for our setting, and I think Laughing Boy fits the bill. And we had a lot of great suggestions for heroes from our back to back at that level. And I'm not sure, have you shared Sable links and the others?
I posted them on Kickstarter, I think. I don't think I sent the backers yet. We didn't do that this week. Hey Dan, you're breaking up pretty bad. Can you speak into the mic?
Oh, sure. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, yeah.
Okay. Basically, all the back art is on the Wiki backers page. I put it up under their characters, so it's easily downloadable and set up as a reference for everyone to take a look at.
Okay. The Wiki spaces is just where the creators are, Dan.
I'm mentioning this to you.
Oh, okay.
Backstage stuff, so that they know about this, and it's not just we come up and talk about what we're doing, but the little behind the scenes, a little inside baseball for everybody. I'm telling Mike now where he can find all the artwork that I've done. There is one person's artwork that is different than the sample they gave us. I did a redesign so that we could act the character in our stuff in perpetuity. It's kind of a businessy, kind of shitty thing sometimes, but I'm doing it on purpose. I switched the character, so I'm in there, and I wish now it's working. But I.
Dan, are you on a table mic or something? You're breaking up pretty bad. Are you moving back and forth away from the mic, or what's going on?
It could be my connection is all crappy.
Okay. All right, so basically the artist at the Wiki, Dan, told me, and you this is like the DVD director's cut, you guys get the behind-the-scenes commentary, so...
Yep.
That's gone. That's cool. Other stuff we should mention, our friend Jonathan Thompson, the Battlefield Press International, is doing a Kickstarter for a Savage Worlds product called Terran Trade Authority, which is based on a old 1970s classic sci-fi series, and I'll put a link to it on the show notes. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. You've got 9 days left. You could use your support, so I just wanted to pimp that while we were thinking about it.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about the series, Mike?
Well, I can, but Wikipedia can. Terran Trade Authority is a science fiction setting originally presented in a collection of four large illustrated books published between 78 and 1980. The series was written by Stuart Cowley. And the books form a connected space opera milieu, describing the future history of mankind's exploration in the galaxy, presented in the guise of the official handbook of the trade organization from which the setting takes its name. I had one of these books when I was a kid, and it was... I didn't read a lot of it, just the art was incredible. And I understand he's going to be doing a similar art style in his RPG setting. So,
who's he got for art?
That's a good question. Let me go over here and find out. It was a guy I hadn't heard of before. Let's see. You have to ask me these hard questions.
Well, that's my job. I mean, you know, I'm here to put you on the spot.
Okay, well, while I'm looking for that, let me...
I will also pimp something for a friend of mine. Andrew Colas and Zenith Comics are still working on a comic. We actually switched primary penciler and inker to a fellow who is pretty damn good, Alex Williamson, and I'll be doing the colors for the book, but you'll be seeing more on that later. Hopefully we'll have Andrew on the show and talk to him about that when he can become available. He's been kind of busy.
Okay, it turns out that he starts turning us on his own podcast too.
Yep. Oh yeah, he does a podcast as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got like a crazy radio station he can go to make his podcast. It's nuts.
It does sound really good. It makes it sound like we're a bunch of assholes recording it over Skype. So
yeah. Yeah, you guys are assholes.
Shut up, man. Jesus.
Andy, could you do that just like around the house? You're at the supermarket, all of a sudden you and George are talking about kumquats. I mean, how does this work?
Just in my head.
Okay, alright, cool. Alright, I can't find the name of the artist on the Kickstarter page. I apologize. I wish I could, but I'm searching for artists and artists, and I'm just not finding it. But it looks like it's cool stuff. It's going to be new. I think it's CGI rendered stuff, but it's... wait a second, here it is. Let's see, guy's name, first name is Ian. Hang on, Ian Stead. And he's biomassart@wordpress.com. I will include a link to that. I think he's been involved in some of the Traveler art, judging by his website. So I'll throw a link to that in the show notes, too. So yeah, it looks like a lot of cool shifts. So yeah, definitely check that out. Hey, Walt, I was thinking about you the other day.
I hear that a lot.
I was watching this show on HBO called Generation Kill. It was about the Second World War. Yeah. And I was getting a new appreciation for not having ever been in the military.
Yeah, well, you know, it's got good days and bad days. I mean, when I was on active duty in the, you know, back during Revolutionary War, it was a little bit different. You know, you had your daily grind that you did, but then, you know, you had a lot of camaraderie and everything you brought to work would then be brought to the field with you. So you every day was an experience and a little bit different than the next. But then I got out for like 10 years, and then when I came back in, I went into the National Guard in my state, and it was weird because within, you know, 5 minutes we were deployed, and it was a different kind of atmosphere because on active duty, you know, the average age of the people you were working with were between 18 and 25. And now you had a variety of age ranges, but not only that, but you had people from all walks of life and all different experiences. So, you know, whereas in the active duty side, if you needed something, you know, you might have to call over to another unit to try and get it. But the National Guard guys, you could have, if you needed a truck fixed, they had no access to a mechanic. It, 9 times out of 10, one of your guys was probably a mechanic.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, it was interesting, and it still is interesting. And you know, I consider myself lucky that I serve with very good people, and I also consider myself lucky that I was able to serve with my wife overseas, which, you know, I'm very proud of her for her service as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, thanks to you and your wife, man.
I appreciate it. Yeah, you did. Dan actually did a fantastic picture. I sent him a picture of my wife posing with some camels, and he shot back a very nice illustration of her in a desert scene, and very well rendered, and we have it up on the mantle even today.
Awesome. Yeah, that actually was done with me and James Dawsey. James Dawsey did all the pencils, and I did the inks and the colors on that one. Yeah, that was a fun one. I actually got to study a lot about how camouflage actually looks, so it would actually look accurate, because I knew that would be a big sticking point if it didn't look accurate to two soldiers.
Yeah, that's the problem with today's camouflage. Like everything else in the military, you get everything at a bidding process, and the current camouflage, Army combat uniform, the problem with it is it was originally designed to break up the outline of the human body at night in an urban environment, but they call it a universal camouflage, so it really didn't do what they thought it was going to, because the only environment it really blends into is this one woman's couch in Boise, Idaho. The Marines and now the Army overseas in Afghanistan, they have their own uniforms, and they do a much better job. So there's different ways to go about it, but the uniforms are constantly in a state of change, which is a good thing, because as we discover better ways to hide from the enemy, so that it's a little harder to hit us. They find different ways to keep finding us, so we keep adapting.
Right. Well, that's although we are like the thing, our country has the Army that is the best one right now. I mean, as far as technology goes, right?
Yeah, certain things, and then certain things, we kind of lack. So it really all depends on what specific you're talking about. I mean, if you're talking about our standard of technology and how we implement it, yes, we do very well. I mean, when I could be in the middle of a desert in Iraq, and I can call for help to somebody in California who then shoots over to Germany, and then and everything's through satellite, instantaneously, it's amazing.
My dad was on that logistics train setting that up, went to Seoul, Korea, and everything. He was in the Army as well, logistics, and that's what he did, was to make sure that you guys could do all that.
Yeah, that's pretty tight.
Yeah. But, thanks again.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, in Generation Kill, I was, I'm a fat guy in the gym doing my 45-minute elliptical, feeling pretty good about it. And then Generation Kill, it's Marine Recons in Kuwait before they go into Iraq. And, they just suit up in full mop gear, hazardous warfare stuff. In the middle
that
of
hurts.
Middle of the day in Iraq, desert, goes fucking sprinting around camp. Not jogging, fucking sprinting. And I'm like, I'm a huge pussy. I should just go back home and get it just and watch TV.
I like superheroes. They're fake. Because real heroes, man, they make you feel like shit.
Yeah, it's amazing, too, because you get...
And it burns you, too, because you're like 19.
Yep.
When I was 18, I was playing Genesis on my television.
Yeah,
they're really good at Super Mario, dude. I was really good. Like, you don't even know. Yeah, he was running. Yeah. Like, did he beat 8-8 on Super Mario? I don't think so.
You get a new appreciation for the kind of shape that you actually have to be in to go overseas, because you're talking, you get your basic clothing, which weighs about 4 to 6 pounds. But then on top of that, you have 45 to 60 pounds of armor, depending on your body style and height. And then you add 20 pounds of ammunition, and then depending on the weapon you're carrying, anywhere between 6 to 20 pounds. You're talking, even before you pick up a backpack or a rucksack, you're talking 75 to 80 pounds or more already on your body. And that's just to go to work every day.
Yeah, some of these realistic details just kind of kill the romance of gaming, because, I've played modern RPGs where you're a SEAL unit or whatever, and you don't think about, I'm carrying 70 pounds of gear right now.
Yeah, they're vaulting over tables and, sliding under things, and you're like, when you've got gamers who are actually playing those roles, and and watching watching that take place, we kind of giggle because it's like yeah, you're not sliding under the table, because if you are, you don't have that that plate that you say that is protecting your upper torso. Yeah, it's not in there. It's too heavy for you to do that. You wouldn't be able to bend over or jump or do so forth and so on. But you can learn to get pretty mobile in that stuff. I mean, we can get around and you learn to do obstacle courses and learn how to operate in and out of a Humvee, and you see the size of a Humvee and you're thinking, this is a huge vehicle, but because of all the armor and equipment that's in it, there's no room to move around in there. So I mean, you add that armor, which adds an extra 6 inches to your front, back, and side. Now
I will say this though, that, like, you cannot take like the movement things to those video games, but I learned early on, don't play against military guys if they're all on the same team. Definitely do transfer over to the video games. It's like, oh, do you know what a kill zone is? Well, you're about to find out. They get a guy, they chase a guy down to run him into an area, and then bring all of his friends. And it's like, yeah, they just circle around you and then just destroy you. It's like, you're cheating. I was like, dude, I'm a Navy SEAL. And he's like, you're lying. And I'm like, dude, I believe him. I watched them clear, like, go into a building, clear the building, and move to the next building. Like, I was like, this is like watching a very, very, like, when you're watching spectator cam, it's like, oh, this is ugly. Like, yeah. We're being taken advantage of.
Yeah, if the guys start doing, there are three rules that you're talking about when you want an effective military engagement. You want to be able to shoot, move, and communicate. And if you've got guys in a video game that understand that and do all three of those, then they're going to dominate any space that they enter.
Yeah,
I was in paintball one day, and the guys from the SWAT team showed up. The suckers, they all brought their own gear, and they had little headset mics, and just forget about it.
Yep, that'll do it.
Yeah.
So, although I did have an argument with a guy on Xbox before I canceled my Xbox account. We're playing Modern Warfare, and he's like, dude, you're so cheap. You hide all the time. Like, I'm wearing a ghillie suit, and I'm hiding in the bushes because that's what a sniper does. He doesn't walk around. I'm not running up to you with my knife and stabbing you while I'm wearing a haystack. I'm hiding to shoot you from cover.
Yeah.
But as soon as I've shot you in the ass, I'm running away and finding a new spot to shoot you in the ass.
Yep, and that's the problem that you have with a lot of games. And now, even you got guys coming out of basic training now, and you go to a training event with your unit, and they're doing some crazy stuff, and you're like, dude, what are you doing? Did you learn that in basic training? Oh man, well, it works in Modern Warfare. And it's like, I'm sorry, man. A, there's no respawn. B, if you do that, you're gonna fall off of what you're on and probably break something. So you need to stop, reassess, and renegotiate that obstacle. So yeah, it's even infecting some of the guys that you get out of we're new, so you gotta kind of retrain those guys and show them that modern military tactics are very different than how you play or how you approach a video game.
Right.
Damn. It's not a problem you have a D&D players, is it?
I'm sorry?
It's not a problem you have a D&D players in the armed services, is it?
No. The thing that I used to get with D&D players a lot is I've been studying martial arts since I was 8, and one of them was very weapons-based, very authentic, and one of the problems I used to get was, you'd roll a 1 on a 20-sided die, and the GM would look at you and say, well, you hit yourself with your sword. It's like, what? Dude, have you ever used the weapon you're talking about? Listen, you don't know what you're talking about. And, you'd get crazy things like that, and people who had never actually use or utilize the weapon that you're talking about. And you see the same thing in the movie industry. We were talking about Andrew Colas a little while ago, and Andrew works in the movie industry, and we both get driven slightly insane and almost homicidal when you're watching a movie and somebody runs out of ammunition and they're using an assault rifle and they keep pulling the trigger and the trigger keeps clicking. Well, unfortunately, yeah, that doesn't work like that. So, in order for that trigger to click, they would have to keep cocking the weapon, and you see that a lot.
Toy guns do that. Battery powered like machine guns do. Like all those old machine guns by Marx did that when they ran out of bullets because it was feeding them rather than an explosion driving the next chamber into the round. I watch a lot of R. Lee Ermey, man. Mail call.
Yep.
He showed me exactly how a machine gun works.
And you know, the thing is, you don't get a lot of times, you know, guys just want to come in and they want to play their games and stuff like that. So, you know, as if you know these things or you've experienced these things, you know, the best thing that you can do while you're at the table is just sit there and, you know, just either get a silent chuckle or, you know, just yes and it and keep going so that the fun doesn't stop, because you don't want to cause a 20-minute argument and take away from everybody's fun with, well, that's not going to do it that way, or this isn't going to play out like this. You know, you just sit there and you say, all right, yeah, here we go, and then just move on to the next die roll and see what happens.
Pathfinder replaced that with, even, like, unless you use the decks of cards that they have, which are really cool, but there are things where you hurt yourself, but they explain it like you missed a guy, you hit something solid, and it reverberates up your arm, causing
that,
you under the next round.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's ever played baseball will see that.
Yeah, or even golf. Like, if you hit it, you're like, oh, what the hell?
Hey, speaking of D&D, there was some news today on the interwebs. It seems some folks, including members of the Gygax family, have done two things. They're starting Gygax Magazine. It's going to be a gaming magazine. And they have bought the copyrights TSR, the trademark TSR,
which slaps.
Apparently in 2010 or 2011, they bought it in December of 2011.
Yep.
So they're a new company, not the old TSR, and they're going to, let's see, they're going to do this gaming magazine called Gygax, and not a whole lot more details about it yet. Gygaxmagazine.com is the link for that,
And
I'll post the link to the AM World discussion talking about that.
Big ups to AM World, too, man. They did a lot of, like, investigation on this, like, immediately. They were very, very tenacious about finding out who owns it, getting in contact with them, looking up their credentials. Like, they're like, yeah, they knew this guy's resume backwards and forwards just to make sure that it wasn't just some pipe dream.
Now, what does that mean for the current iterations of Dungeons & Dragons, or what are they planning to do other than a magazine?
There's almost no details.
Yeah, I think he gave a mission statement. The guy who's he's a magazine guy, so he's the guy who's been the very small mouthpiece for the tiny bits of information that have been out there, so that he wanted to be a bridge between current gaming and what they plan on doing with the TSR brand, but they didn't go any further than that.
There's a guy named Jason Elliott who, right now, he does a magazine that's a gothic lifestyle magazine called Permission, and those jokes write themselves, guys. You don't have to make them. He's apparently a Bill Magazine guy, and yeah, they're doing this thing. So, that's pretty much all we know about it right now. It looks interesting. Hope it's some cool stuff. I know we just lost a gaming magazine. Quarterly just shut down. So, this will be cool. Hopefully it's cool. We shall see, hopefully, in the near future what they're coming out with. So, let's see. I don't have much more gaming stuff to talk about. Hasbro just registered a trademark for Rum the Space Knight.
What?
Yeah, I'll post that link too. And apparently he's also appearing just in a very small way in the an Ultron War comic event coming out from Marvel. And there's
Marvel still owns the name, right?
No, they don't. That's why he hasn't been appearing. Yeah. That's why whenever they talk about the Galador Knights or anything, they always talk about space after me. But yeah, in the Age of Ultron preview art, they've got one of Tony Stark's famous, you know, walls full of Polaroids. And Rom is right there front and center between Doctor Strange and Wiccan. So,
but he's not going to mention him. He's not going to, like, go, hey, and check this guy out. Is he?
The picture's there with the name Rom on it. So,
Rom, get a load of this asshole. He doesn't even have fingers. I'm in space and I have mittens.
So did they finally work out the problems they were having with that toy company that actually owned the rights to it?
All we got here, I'll post a link to it, is that they filed a trademark for Rom Space Knight toy line. Or they filed a trademark on November 7th, Hasbro did. Mm. And that's pretty much all they say. They kind of go into history of the toy line, how it failed, how the comic was much more successful than the toy line. So,
yeah.
I think it's one of those things where someone said, hey, the comic book movies, they're making $1 billion now. And someone said, well, really? So,
Rom Space Knight, dude, I got Rom for my 5th birthday. It was not a toy. It was a sound effects machine with two arms.
Yeah,
basically. And lit up, which, dude, believe me, when I saw the commercials at 5 years old, I was like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I had it for 25 minutes. My brother took it downstairs and took it completely apart. He was like, my little brother had, like this meth head thing about taking things, just dismantling them, and then laying the pieces out perfectly like a serial killer. And he like did that to a stereo my dad gave him. He like took each of the diodes off the boards. Like he would just lay it all out, and then he would try to put it all back together. He didn't have solder or anything, but he put everything back together except for ROM. He just broke ROM to shit. And I was like, oh. Then my dad replaced it with a Shogun Warriors Guy King and a Shogun Warriors Godzilla. All was forgiven.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I got awesome toys instead of ROM Space Knight, so I kind of dodged a bullet there. But my dad was so pissed because ROM was like $40. Because we're living in Germany at the time. We're at the Patch Barracks in Germany. So it's like getting toys there was like, yeah, I know you want Star Wars, but we're not in America. I don't even know how you know about this crap because we don't have commercials. Seriously, man. I had comics. That was it.
They're all for Smurfs and Nutella. I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly. Dude, seriously? Smurfs was the shizzle. So we're in Stuttgart, so that's like Smurf Central. They had a whole store dedicated to Smurfs. Like, they have Hello Kitty stores.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
I was actually born in Stuttgart in 72.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Dad was in a... they said to Dad, all right, Vietnam or Germany? He said, Germany. So, yeah.
My dad said very much the same thing. He got out of the Navy, got in the Army, and they said Vietnam or computers. And he was like, computers!
Yeah.
He's like, thank God I know how to use a computer. So he started on the Honeywells back in 76, and then we moved to Germany in 80.
Oh, well, back in the day. Cool, cool.
Yep.
All right, guys, well, hey, I got to go. I got to walk the dog.
Yes, and give my best to your wife. Hope she's feeling good.
Cause thanks, yeah.
The months are passing, man. They're getting closer and closer.
Yeah, we're 4 months away from the
arrival.
I can't even
the
talk
Lapertos. About it.
The laughing spawn will arrive on March.
The Lapertine.
March 17th, March 18th. Yeah.
So if we all chip in and buy a very, very tiny top hat, you will get a picture of it.
Yes, I will.
Do you know the sex of the child yet?
It's going to be a boy.
Yay!
Yeah.
Says the men. The patriarchy rules again. We need more white males, as the last election has proven. Clearly that's the problem.
What brand of cigars should I send?
I don't know, man. Whatever's cheap and tastes decent. I haven't smoked a cigar since the last one of my cousins had a kid. So it's been like 5 years. So yeah, well, whatever works for you. So
gotcha. I'll just send. I'll just have to send a single malt instead.
That works too. So although, you know, we're here in Colorado, and all kinds of stuff just got legalized. So I get there.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I can't send that through the mail.
No, that's still highly illegal. So yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? Your kid's going to grow up in a world where there is no Nancy Reagan bullshit about drugs. How weird is that, dude?
Yeah.
That is the strangest thing ever. Like, yeah, you cannot believe. Like, you'll be talking to your kid, your son, about prohibition, basically. Back in my day.
Well, there's still a federal
prohibition.
Well,
that's totally illegal.
The cops can still bust you. It's legal at the state level, but right. The DA can still bust you.
Right, but honestly, dude, they're not going after a guy with a plant in his window.
Yeah.
They're not going after George Carlin's Toledo window box. Yeah. They're going after guys who are like bales, bushels of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a game designer, so I'm lazy and forgetful. And I don't need
additional assistance with laziness or sleepiness or wanting to watch television. Trust me, I get that done while I work.
Yeah, this is true. Okay, guys, well, hey, I got to wrap it up.
All right, man.
So until next time. Make mine dance.